everyone, and welcome to minute 27 of season 10 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Bubba Wheat from It's Time to Rewind. Welcome back to the show, Bubba.
Hello, hello, hello.
Yeah, it's I'm excited to keep talking about this movie with you because it's so fresh in your mind, you know, after having only seen it for the first time recently. All right, so minute 27 begins with Blue finishing his statement and ends with Garber giving Patron instructions. So yesterday was pretty much a day of just letting us start to hear the first conversation between Blue and the I guess you could say good guys, and you know, they made things very clear. You know, we get an idea of what's of what is really going on here, because again, up until now, they haven't given us that much information. We know it's hijacking. We don't know anything about it beyond that. So they're slowly giving us information along the way. And this minute opens up with Dick O'Neill, Carell, just looking, getting ready to respond, you know, to everything that that Blue's saying. And what I really like is you see that everyone in the entire room is attentive and is paying attention to what's going on here, which which says one of two things: either they're all really, really bored, or this is something that is so unique that they all want to be a part of this. I mean, like we've all seen movies you know, that take place in the radar tower and stuff like that, where or even you can even use the same analogy for places, you know, where you have call centers and stuff like that, where everyone's, you know, chatting one next to the other and stuff like that. But here, they, you know, everyone has stopped what they're doing to listen to what's going on here. And it's not as if you know, he's raised the microphone level so high. You know, he hasn't reached the volume of 11 here in order for everyone to really hear what's going on. That's the thing that gets me. It's like immediately everyone knows what's going on here with him.
Well, it's not every day that somebody steals a subway car.
That's true, but you know, we talked yesterday about what a you know, what a train master does. My assumption is everyone in this room is a train master. You know, everyone has their little area, their niche that they're in charge of. You know, Carell is not only in charge of one place here. Sorry, he's in charge of one place, but everyone else is in charge of the different areas. You know, the fact that they've all now just given up on what's going on by them. I mean, this was also very pre-9/11. I'm assuming that nowadays people would be on alert for more than one train being hijacked at the same time. You know, from that perspective, mm-hmm. Yeah, you gotta make sure that it's not like this is the only one. So yeah, I don't know. Blue continues with making sure that they understand what's going on, and he goes, "Have I made myself quite clear?" And what's Carell's response? He goes, "You're out of your skull." have you ever used that phrase before?
No, not. I'm not even sure if I've like said, "Are, you know, you're out of your mind." You know, I can't think of off the top of my head what phrase that I would use. Probably just, you know, "You're crazy," but. Yeah, definitely not. You're out of your skull. And, you know, one thing that did strike me about this entire movie is it's, you know, other than a few characters, like, you know, pretty much all of the minor characters are very New York. You know, yeah. You got a lot of heavy New York accents throughout this movie.
Yeah. My assumption is that most of these people are like New York actors, that they just give them you know, parts here in order to help. You know, we'll get into Kaz a little later in the week, where you know, that he's really, really New York.
Mm.
Tom Petty, PEDI, not Petty, not of Not Tom Petty of the Heartbreaker. A different Tom Petty. And so basically the term I looked up to see what it means, right? So the phrase originates from the idea of being mentally unwell or extremely bored. Using the skull as a metaphor for the use of your mind. The phrase out of one's skull means out of one's mind or crazy, and it was first recorded in Tom Wolfe's book from 1968, The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. And sometimes, it's used, I'm bored out of my skull, which, for someone who's extremely bored. And the idea of using a skull as opposed to the mind is trying to emphasize there's even more of a lack of mental engagement or stimulation through the whole thing. I, obviously the idea of out of one's mind goes back much further, but because out of my skull only theoretically, according to the research I did, only originated was 6 years before this movie came out. So it's interesting that they would have included it already. I guess Tom Wolfe's book was quite popular back then, and somehow they decided to add it in there. So yeah. So then, after Carell says that, Blue goes, "Be that as it may, get out a pen and take down the list of my demands." And he goes, "Hey, wait a minute." Then he turns around and then he goes, "Hold on, stand by." And then he turns around and looks at everyone in the room, including Garber, and he goes, "What the hell would anybody want to hijack a goddamn subway train for?" Now, at this point, Garber says something very, very interesting. He says, "Hit your six button, will you, Frank? I want the TA police in on this." Do you have any idea what he's talking about when he says hit your six button?
Well, imagine that's the different buttons are just numbered, and each number is connected to a something else, and the six is the one that's connected to the transit authority.
So you're saying that's just the extension to get to the transit authority is to push extension six, and that's it.
Yeah, that was my guess.
Okay, I mean I was trying to figure it out, and anything that I searched to try and find about what is a six button, it would give me searches on six button joysticks, six button remote controls, anything. I couldn't find what it means. It's just I thought that it seems as if it's some sort of code, but it's very possible that you're correct, that it's not any code at all. It's just like, okay, hit extension six and get the TA online, and that's it. It
Yeah.
all
Yeah, and I assume that Garber would be familiar enough being here that he knows which extension would get him to that office, because that's basically his office.
yeah, for sure. There's no question about that. But my other thought was is that maybe he's telling him to make sure that he hits mute. Basically saying mute yourself because I want to get the TA police in on this. Mute the mic so that nobody hears that that's what we're doing or something like that. That's the only other explanation I can think of. But I think either one is a plausible explanation for this whole thing. And then Carell looks around and goes, "What the hell are all these Chinamen doing in here anyway?" And Garber goes, "Holy Christ, I forgot." He goes, "Charlie, would you take these monkeys up to 13?" So, obviously, this is something that would never be put in a modern movie. This whole the way that Garber is dealing with these executives, but I gotta say, it's still done in a very, very funny way, the way that they do it here, even though it's completely un-PC. It's also un-PC for Carell to call them Chinamen instead of Japanese, that type of thing. But it still gets a laugh from the whole from the way that the situation, because they're talking about a hijack, and then he turns around and goes, what are these Chinamen doing here? I mean, I didn't even
Yeah,
notice
they're like
you had done before.
Yeah, the joke kind of falls on their racism and ignorance, and it's I think it's a nice comedic beat, after the seriousness of, what we just learned or what they just learned, that their subway train has been hijacked by four armed men and they've taken 17 people hostage. And then we have this, joke about these Japanese businessmen who Garber thought didn't speak English at all, and he was just making fun of them the whole time. And then they reveal that, yes, they do speak English, and they do know what he was saying the entire time. And
Correct.
and
They're not
they.
offended. And they're not offended by anything that he said, because he's, he's constantly ribbing them and saying things that one shouldn't be saying.
Yeah, they just take it all in stride, and they just say, we can just we can find it for ourselves. Thank you for the tour.
Exactly. And then, so the first executive says, "It's all right, Lieutenant Garber. I'm sure we can find it by ourselves." And then the second one walks by and goes, "And thank you for a most instructive visit, Lieutenant." And then the third one goes, "A most exciting tour, Lieutenant." And they're bowing to him. And the fourth one goes, most exciting," as they walk by. And you can actually see on Walter Matthau's face that he realizes that he really put his foot in his mouth here. We get a shot of him that he looks really, really embarrassed, which you wouldn't expect them to give us. But I guess one of the things that they're showing here also is these characters are have flaws. Nobody's perfect. And in the 70s world, obviously that things were very different. I mean, we had the whole conversation, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, with Kaz talking about the fact that how you gonna run a goddamn how do you run a goddamn railroad without cursing? And just because they're women here, now we gotta start talking differently, that type of thing. So in the novel, he gets even more crass with the things that he says. I guess we were spared in the transfer to in the screenplay that they decided to tone that down a little bit. And at this point, Garber then gets on the radio, and he goes, "Garber to Patrone, Garber to Patrone, come in, Patrone." And then we're back with Jerry Stiller, and we see him still reading the newspaper, lounging around. I tried to see if I can read any of the headlines, but they're really out of focus. It's hard to tell exactly what's going on in the newspaper that he I think I see I think it says the next step, Fraser will retire. So that must be talking about the that's a boxer, Joe Frazier. But again, I wonder what he was doing in 1974. Okay, so there we go. He had a big fight against Muhammad Ali in on January 28th at Madison Square Garden, and they had a 12-round bout. And Ali won by unanimous decision, which means that he still got he still made it through the whole thing. So that and according to this, Frazier had a actually it's very interesting, because if he's fighting then, I'm a little confused here with the timeline, because again, this movie takes was released in 74, but we presume that it's taking place in either late 73 or early 74. So to be talking about Frazier getting ready to retire when he's just had the, if he fought Ali in January. So I wonder at what point, is it something that happened like right after that? I'm not sure. I mean, Joe Frazier was born in 1944, passed away in 2011. His nickname was Smoking Joe. And he was the undisputed heavyweight champion from 1970 to 1973. And he lost his title to George Foreman. And he continued, he was still boxing in 75. Because he lost in the Thriller in Manila in 1975, and then he retired in 76 after he had lost the second time to Foreman. So again, something is off here, whether it's whether it's just a fake out and they made fake headlines here. I don't know. Or what do you think?
I don't know. It's tough to say. The version I'm looking at is way too blurry to see anything.
Because again, the movie was released October 2nd, 1974. Okay, so maybe Frazier was contemplating retiring after he lost in January. Maybe that could be the only explanation. Yeah, I don't know. We never find out what the actual date is. But it feels as if it's like fall where this is all taking place. But again, there's no way of knowing. And then so Patron responds and he goes, "This is Patron." And he goes, "Rico, I want you to plug everything you got into the IRT train master." And then he gets cut off. People are gonna have to wait until tomorrow to find out exactly what it is that he's going to tell Rico that he wants him to do. Did you have anything else you wanted to add about this particular minute?
One thing that I did think was interesting is that the two transit authority police that they have in this movie are comedic actors, and I was wondering if that was intentional on the filmmaker's part or not.
I don't know. I was never able to figure out why they decided to cast either of them. I think that both of them are perfectly cast. There's only one comment about Jerry Stiller on IMDb about this movie, and it's in an episode of The King of Queens. Doug, who's played by Kevin James, finds out that his father-in-law, who Jerry Stiller plays the character, he used to be an actor. And they show a clip of him in this movie as, like proof that he had been an actor at some point. They did on purpose to choose two comedic actors. Because again, what I don't know how much of a comedian Jerry Stiller was at this time. You think I don't know if he was known as a comedic actor always. Maybe he was.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but
Okay, all right,
if
yeah, okay. He was a comedian. He was the straight man. And he and his wife had a comedy troupe that they had a comedy team they did. And they actually appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show 36 times. Wow, that's amazing. And so yeah, he was the straight man to his wife. So from that perspective, I can sort of understand why they would put him here. Because Patron is sort of a straight man with the way that he deals with things, sort of.
Yeah, like both of those characters, there are humorous elements that happen around them, but neither one of them are funny characters in and of themselves.
I definitely agree with that. All right, so every Tuesday we do a segment called the Blues Day Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Robert Shaw performances. So once again, hopefully you have five again.
Well, unfortunately, I am much less familiar with Robert Shaw's career. And looking through his movies, I only found one other movie that I had seen of his. And
Interesting.
so my number two is going to be, I'm trying to decide because they both, I feel like this movie has a stronger overall performance, but then He's got the one great scene in Jaws, but I think I'll give his the number two to this one, Pelham 1, 2, 3, and then I will give his number one to Jaws, just for the sheer strength of that, his speech in that movie.
Indianapolis speech.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair enough. You've never seen The Sting or From Russia with Love?
Nope.
All right. Well, you have your homework.
I've only seen like three Bond movies.
Wow. Interesting. Okay, I think you have a blind spot there. Possibly, possibly.
Possibly.
All right. So, also every day we have a segment where we will play a little game, which is called Name That Remake. So once again, I will spin the wheel and see what movie comes out for Bubba. The wheel is spinning and it's moving around. Around and around the wheel goes. Okay, this is an interesting one. I'm assuming that you've heard of this one. So the original was from 1957, and the remake was in 1997. And it's about a dozen characters who are having a 2-hour debate.
Oh yeah. That I'm pretty sure. I think there is at least one more remake that was done for TV, if I'm correct. And my guess is 12 Angry Men.
Yes, you are correct. The remake in 1997 was a I believe Showtime remake. That's the one with Jack Lemmon playing the main character. I'm not familiar with another straight remake besides those two. I mean, there are a lot of TV shows and stuff like that that would have a like a little play on the whole thing, but an actual like full blown out remake, I believe those are the only two, but I could be wrong. Maybe there is something else there. All right, excellent, nicely done. So, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Bubble Wheat?
Sure. You can find me on all social media where I'm at Bubba Wheat. And another relatively recent project that I did that came out earlier this summer was a part of the Rabbit Hole podcast. We have a feed that's called Sporadicast, because that's kind of I don't want to say our podcast dumping grounds, but any like one-off episodes that don't need an entire podcast devoted to it, but it kind of allows us to experiment and do these one-off projects and sometimes test new ideas for podcasts in there. So there's a lot of variety in there, and one thing that we've done a few times is an audio play. Earlier, the Vern produced one for Clue, where he did a few gender flips, and I played Mr. Peacock in that. He also did one with Reservoir Dogs with an all-female cast, and I produced one. The most recent episode was for Clerks. I produced an audio play version of Kevin Smith's movie Clerks, and I played Dante, and I did all the editing. It's a fully produced audio play with sound effects and music, and it was a lot of fun. It's worth checking out. I enjoyed working on it, and all the cast had a lot of fun doing it, and it is up there ready to listen to, and hope people check it out and enjoy it.
Very
And
cool.
it's f pulled from the it's a mix of the script, which has a few scenes that were deleted in the final version of Clerks. I did also include the lost scene that was eventually animated and included in the Clerks X DVD. And so there's it's not just a straight rehashing of the movie. There are some changes which were kind of interesting to put in there.
Very cool. All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Instagram, you can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So, until tomorrow, choo!
Gesundheit.